This is fine. Hello, everybody. My name is Jürgen Buchmüller, and I want to talk to you about two things. The first thing I want to talk about is, as Andreas mentioned, MAME, where I was involved and still am involved. And the second part will contain some remarks to a project that I started just recently when I stumbled across a very old processor, namely the first processor of Intel, the 4004. And I thought, hey, nobody emulated it, so why don't I start over with my emulations and go from there. I hope you can all read what I put up on an HTML page here, in case you don't understand some things I say. So my profession was, for the most time of the since I started working on computers, was to be a freelancer. I had some engagements, and I've been working on freeware and shareware projects. XBTX, it's a software comparable to US ProdigyNet, I think it was called, the German telecommunication system. And I've always been developing in that area for my life. My experience with emulation started rather early. In 1980, I had my first TRS-80 computer, and I think I remember I tried to emulate a calculator we had, the Hewlett-Packard's 57. And a few years later, my first successful emulation was to emulate 6502. That's a processor that's in the CVM, Commodore CVM, or Apple computers, on a Z80. And so things continued. I was always interested to let the programs from my previous machine run on my next machine, and that's why I tried to emulate. For some years in early 1980s, I was busy writing games myself for a company in Germany. I wrote some games for the Kalogeny computer. I think it was also sold in the UK and even in New Zealand, as far as I know. So after some time working alone on emulations, I finally came in contact with the MAME project in 1999. That was when I stumbled across it on the internet. And the first thing I did, I have written several emulations for the same processor, the Z80, and I looked through the code in MAME and found some bugs and suggested how to fix them. And that was when I was approved to become a list member of the developers list. And I agreed, and that started quite a lot of work for me. So maybe for those of you who don't know what MAME is about or what it is at all, I will tell a few words. An Italian person, Nicola Salmoria, a remarkable person, started working on single hardware emulators in late 1996. Single hardware in this contents means a group or circuit of special kind which contains several chips that have to be emulated, but where multiple games run on the same hardware. So you write one emulator and already can run 10, 15 games. He had several of these projects, so he had several hardwares emulated, and he thought of how to integrate it all into one piece of code or framework, and he named it Multiple Arcade Machine Emulator and released it in 1997. And you can find very much info if you're interested on the site www.mame.net. And it was ported to many platforms, so you don't have to worry if you're on Windows or Unix or Apple operating systems. It works on most systems. It even runs on digital cameras, I heard. The core developers, to name very few, there are hundreds, literally hundreds of people who contributed, and it's hard to decide who's core developer and who's only contributing less. But to name a few, Nicola Salmoria, of course, Mirko Buffoni, who did the first steps of providing web space and spreading the code around. And Mike Balfour, Aaron Giles is still very active and is just recently rewriting some of the things that I wrote a few years ago, because times shifted and things have to be rewritten from time to time. The current version of MAME holds information about 4,953 different ROM sets. So what's a ROM set? A ROM set is all the chips of one specific arcade game from one printed circuit board dumped. This means there are between a few, two, three, or sometimes 20 or 40, 30 files which make up the images of a game. This number is the total number of games, and we differentiate or distinguish unique games from it, because unique games, this means this is one kind of game, while the games include hex or, no, hex is a bad word in this case, variations, versions, different versions, version numbers of the same game. The total amount of images, that is the number of files that are archived in a way or registered in a way in this project, is close to 45,000. 45,000. And we have, for every image, we have verified a CRC32 checksum, MD5 and SHA1 hashes. So we are sure that, or every collector can be sure that if he compares his ROM dump to that what MAME collected in its metadata, that he has the right thing or a correct dump of his ROM available. MAME also includes a lot of DIP switch settings, which is interesting for collectors, because it's sometimes hard to get documentation for the old boards, and you at least need to know how to set up your board to make the real thing go. And that's why even collectors are interested in the data contained in MAME. Then there are about 100 CPU emulations and several sound chip emulations. And we defined, or we had some time where we tried to find words, what is our goal? And to make it clear, I excerpted here what is to read in MAME text on the original archive. First of all, we are non-profit. I think this was a mix between non-perfect and non-profit. Of course, we are non-perfect either. The main purpose, however, is to be a reference to the inner workings of emulated arcade machines, and our main goal is to be educational, so to keep the information how were things done with hardware, because, as I mentioned before, the documents describing how things worked are vanishing and are hard to acquire. And so if you have an emulation, you can take a look at it, and you can even teach if you're a teacher in microprocessor techniques or something. You can use such a project to give your people some advice how to do things. Of course, preserving the games that way, that means by writing code that allows you to play a game, has the side effect that you attract people who are not interested in preservation at all, but in gaming. I think, and I agree with most of the project, of the people taking part in the project, that this actually helps preserving the data, because by spreading the data, you have multiple copies, and if our archive ever is busted or goes down or whatever, there will still be a lot of copies out. My contributions to the MAME project mainly include CPU core emulations. CPU is required for all the games that are in MAME. At one point, we tried to put a non-CPU game in it, but quickly stopped it again. I wrote quite a few of them. I also wrote some sound chip emulations. This is comparable to microprocessors in some cases, while there are quite some differences. It's all about signal processing and schematics reading in many cases, because I also tried to work out some discrete circuits that produce sound, this is quite difficult, and I think I'll leave this to others in the future because it's too hard for me. Some people are complaining that the noise isn't quite right, and especially the fans of specific games have problems with some of my sound emulations because they are not quite correct, and it's difficult to tell how the exact curves and charge discharge of condensators and things did work. I also wrote some drivers, namely for very old games from Meadows, where I also wrote the CPU core, the Signetics 2650 CPU. Those are games from the 1976-77 area, where video games weren't that widely spread. I also wrote a driver for the Data East cassette system, which emulates about 15 game titles. And those games were stored on cassettes, on tapes. And this game system had dongles to prevent operators in arcades from copying just the tapes. So they had the same problems there as they have in other areas. And so they had dongles with it, which were put in the data path of the cassettes to decrypt the data from the tape on its way to the arcade machine. And this was an interesting thing for me to do because I worked together with one of the collectors of these games and we did some kind of remote hacking. He sent me hand drawings of the schematics as far as he could tell. He took apart the epoxy contained dongles and desoldered some of the chips and then made a picture of the schematic, sent it to me. I tried to implement it in software, sent back the results. We got truth tables. He put my truth tables through the dongle and looked if the expected results came out. And after some time, we managed to crack this game. And this was all just to preserve the tapes because there are very few available. And in some cases, it's the very last tape available on the board that we try to discover that way. At least as far as we know. There might be some things in some scat in the backyard. And we are quite happy that we could do it and could preserve these games. Other things I did were a partial rewrite of MAME CPU core interface. That is how all the CPU core emulations are tied together. They have common interface. That's just what I said before, that Aaron is just now going to rewrite once again, because we all have learned a bit more and know better ways to do things. I also rewrote the debugger contained in MAME back then, which is also now being rewritten, now that most of us use GUI systems, while back then we were working on DOS, and it's a different environment to use a debugger on DOS compared to Windows or whatever. And I tried to write a simulation at some point for the Pong game, which most of you will know, I think. The difference is this game had no CPU. It's a pure, discrete TTL chips, and it's very difficult to try to simulate such a thing. What I tried to do was to abstract small parts of the schematics, which first I had to clean up, and because the schematics available weren't quite correct, things were hard to read. And then I had to interpret or to try to interpret parts, functioning parts of the schematics and translate them into C code. And this is where you introduce bugs. You see a counter that counts to 10, and in reality it counts to 9 and resets. And so you introduce bugs. This isn't the case that much with CPU emulations, because there you have a clear description of how the CPU works, and you write it for one game, and it's reused in 10 other games, and if it's right in one game, it's already right for the other games too. And this is why the code was finally removed again, because it's also slightly off-topic of the scope of MAME, because it's non-CPU, and we also had problems with possible legal trouble because this game would not have required to put any ROMs or ROM images into the emulator to run it. because all the code would have emulated all of it. And so someone could claim, you used the schematics and you broke my intellectual property rights, and that's why we took it out again. So the goals of MAME we described above, and there may be the question, why do people do things? And I think one point is that MAME always had challenging things for skilled people to do, difficult to solve problems. And on the other hand, the collectors were attracted by the huge database contained inside MAME. Of course, a feeling of personal success, mastering some hardware, is a thing that drives coders to do things. Collectors want to verify that what they collect is in shape and is all right. Still, the side effect, as I mentioned before, of playing games is MAME has been used and is used just to play games, while we still try to prevent or do something about the main problem, the so-called bit rot. That is, if you have a game data contained in an EEPROM, it will lose its information over time. We are not quite sure about the time frame, but 10 to 20 years, things start to rot away. That is, a programmed zero bit changes back to a one bit on an EEPROM, and this is when data is lost. And if this happens to a prototype board where exactly one copy is in existence on the world, well, then the data would have been lost. The connection to and relation to other emulator projects is mainly that of a Borg, as user community joked. It seemed and seems like MAME was attracting or pulling in every other project around. This is really true. Many people joined from other emulator projects, but I think the main reason for that was that the core design of MAME was very well, and as we see now, it's one of the longest living projects, and I don't think it will ever die. There are always new contributions, and it's basically because the core design was very well and always in mind, had in mind that environments change, while the code base and information once written should not be lost just because the operating system changes. And many emulators are sadly are dead just because no one uses DOS today or some other operating systems. So what does it require for a project like MAME? I think before all, it's the enthusiastic leader. In our case, Nicolas Salmoria. If we hadn't had him, I don't know if anything like MAME would ever have happened. Then, of course, skilled core developers who decide what code goes in and what not. I think that is quite important, because if a lot of enthusiastic people but without the required skills contribute code to something, you can quickly turn it into a mess. This also applies to me. Well, the third thing you need is, networked machines and enough bandwidth on some central repository or several for source file exchange, documentation, which can be quite big, documents and PDF, TIFF files, and sounds and videos to compare emulations to the real hardware, and of course the ROM archives. Then you need a user community to test the code that you wrote, because only the experience of people who know the real hardware, the real game, and can compare it to the experience when playing it in an emulation can tell you if what you did is really correct or if you're only close. And you need, of course, arcade board collectors with skills at identifying hardware, desoldering ROMs from boards, dumping ROMs, and sometimes also social engineering and hacking people to give out their things they have in some backyard or buying boards all around. And last not least, coders to port the core, because I think operating system independency is an important thing for such a project. because you want to preserve things not only for one operating system, but everyone should be able to use it. Well, I think most of the following points are already mentioned. The most important thing is a well-designed core. Strict separation of the operating system dependencies from the core functions are important. I've seen some emulator projects where always operating system code slipped into deeply nested functions, and it's hard to get rid of that, and it's hard to port such kind of code. MAME did avoid it, and that's why it's rather easy to port it to new platforms. Well, why does it work? Because experts, I think it's really experts in their respective areas that come together, and it's funny that they are not paid in any way. Even worse, they sometimes risk legal trouble or other trouble, because after all, what we are doing in some cases is violating the DMCA or similar laws recently. MAME was there before the DMCA was there, but some people really jumped off when they thought about the legal issues that might come up if they continue to reverse engineer some hardware. Another reason why many people are interested in doing games, writing emulations of games, is because they want to have their memories revived in some way. Memories of their youth, where they used to spend huge amounts of bucks or quarters for the arcade games. And it's hard to guess how many time was spent on MAME, but I think if you really count everybody's contribution, it's several hundred man years of work worth what's in it. So that far, I think that was the first glimpse at MAME. If you want to know more, you can go at the website and take a look at the games, which are quite fun to play. Now I wanted to mention what I'm doing now, or what the recent things were that I'm working on. As I mentioned before, I wrote several CPU cores, and I always did it from scratch, you could say. I always started coding in C and always did the same things at the first step. And now I found an interesting way to tackle CPU emulation, I think interesting way, and it's not to emulate an opcode in a whole, but the microcode of the CPU. Now, if you don't know what microcode means, a CPU executes commands just like your computer executes commands, and each command is still comprised of a lot of smaller steps, and these steps are called microcode in the case of CPUs. And to get accurate as possible emulation, you would really have to emulate the microcode of a CPU, because in some cases, for games or demos for certain computers, you really need the exact timing sequence of each opcode to have the things going right. I think István will tell how this applies to Amiga in some cases and demos.
Yeah, sure.
And so what I started working on is a tool to that helps generating code, generating emulators from a description of the inner workings of a CPU. And after some thinking, it was first called MuCSM, while then Andreas found out that there's a commercial project, so the first thing was to change the name, look for a new name. And then I called it COMIC by suggestion of my girlfriend, Commonly Oriented Microinstruction Compiler. What does it do? You just write down what a CPU does, how it looks like. That means you describe the number of address bus bits, the number of data bus bits, the registers and how they were named, the layout. This is all very technical stuff, but it's rather easy to do. And then you go and write down a proposed or assumed sequence, or if you have any kind of documentation, of the microcode operation for each opcode. That is, you have an operation like add accumulator B, then you go and divide it up into single steps. Put A into some temporary register, take B tell the arithmetic logic unit to add those two and write the result back. This is what you do, and you have it in one source file. And then my tool, what my tool does is it goes and assembles these statements you design on your own. You describe your own language to describe the CPU. It depends on how the CPU, what kind of operations it actually has. They are all very similar and still different in details. And then Comic goes and emits various possible outputs. One is an interpreter mode, where the pseudo microcode that's generated is then interpreted just as you would have interpreted the opcodes of the CPU. This is mainly used for debugging the microcode itself to see exactly what's going on. The commonly used technique is to emit code into C functions. So each opcode is contained in one function, and you have a dispatcher in the main function that decides next opcode, okay, call this, next opcode, call this. And finally, the recent thing I've tried is to pre-generate x86 assembly code and put it all in line. The advantage of this is still a bit quicker than calling C functions, because there are no calls, it's all executed in one line, only with jumps between the code. And the advantage is I changed this generator once to put things together in a new way. And all the CPU code definitions I have, and I already have quite a few, and I'm still already working on even more, will then be usable in the new way or in the new model at once. That means if I find a way to emit optimized assembly code for one host platform, I have all the CPU cores defined under this model ready at once. And this is different from how we did things over the last years. Limits of the concept, of course. It's not too well suited to describe the newest CPUs like DSP processors, or I think describing Pentium 4 would be difficult. It would be possible, but it's difficult just because the sheer amount of microcode to write down. This might be different for RISC processors, where it's rather easy to write a microcode because a RISC processor has only few instructions. Then the limits of the executing machine, of course, come into place. Most machines nowadays have 32 bits, and so emulating a 64-bit CPU on a 32-bit architecture is going to be slow no way what you do, no matter what you do. Another limit to the concept is it requires time to write down everything. I was rather quick at some of the CPUs, which I knew very well. Most of them took me 1 or 2 days to write, but there might be cases where it takes weeks or months to get things finished. While it's still the pro argument is you do it once and you can reuse this code over and over. So what the contributions I want to see for this project, if anyone is going to help us or me? First thing would be to test the existing CPU core. So if you have an emulator or have written an emulator and want to plug in one of the CPU emulations, or if you know people who could be interested to emulate some old machine, it would be nice to have people running the code that's generated and see if their games or whatever they run on it, the software they run on it, probably reveal any bugs in the code. Then important would be CPU data books or copies of them to take a look at if they contain hints on how the actual microcode was executed. And of course, writers of microcode definitions for more CPUs would be quite fine, especially if they were very close into the machine. That is, demo coders of the 80s or 90s would certainly be able to write down a definition, because those were the people who were very deep into how exactly a CPU behaved. An interesting point I think might have to discuss and probably implement DRC, dynamically recompiled code. The difference to just only executing assembler code would be that in the moment where the emulation executes one opcode, it would not just only execute the code somewhere in memory, but it would reassemble it, realign it, or reconcatenate it in the order of the opcodes of the executed machine. And this means what you get is finally an almost native program running on your machine that behaves just as the program you are emulating or running on the emulator. And that's important if for the newer CPUs to emulate. If you want to emulate an x86, say 386, on a Pentium, you have to be fast so that it can be of any use. Portals would be required to different architectures because right now I only cared about x86 assembly code. So if some people knowing PowerPC or Alpha or other processors would join in, this would be quite helpful. So, and finally, just to give you an impression, I thought I start one or two of the things that run already under this emulation, and I please to bear with me for the now coming sound, because it's just the original. It's an emulation of the very old console, the Arcadia 2001, which was sold in 1982, and which ran on a Signetix 2650 processor. And this is just a game to give you an example what you can do with such an emulation.
Because it was a cartridge-based system, it's supposed to be not a loading music, but an intro, isn't it? But
this is the intro, and it's playing. You can't break it. You have to wait until it's finished, and then you can start again.
Okay.
Yes, and now you could even play it here on this machine. The noise is, of course, very sophisticated. Well, that's just to show what you can do with emulations. Okay. I think that's enough to show. If you are interested, all this stuff is available or will shortly be available. I need to write some documentation. There is already a CVS repository containing the code, and I will write some things up, and I think I will be linked from your side, Andreas, mm-hmm. and perhaps we can put something together on your side.
Yeah, sure, we will do.
So that was what I wanted to tell you, and I thank you very much for your patience.
Yeah, thank you. So if there are one or two questions of understanding, so please go ahead.